theme for today's talk is called Taking Refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In our journey through life, we will encounter beauty, joy, pain, loss, love, the various travails, the ups and downs of life. And the Buddha named them as the eight worldly winds that blow through our lives. They are the four pairs of opposites, and he instructed us to investigate our response and relationship to them. The classic four pairs of opposites are praise and blame, pleasure and pain, success and failure, gain and loss. And we could add a whole host of others, sickness and health, being and non-being, all of these dichotomies of abundance and lack, love and hatred, desire and aversion. So given our vulnerability as human beings to the forces around us and these eight worldly winds of change, where can we take refuge in this fleeting world of dewdrops? What can we have faith in when everything falls apart in these shifting sands of time? The Buddha, through his great realization and experience, saw clearly into the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering, the causes of suffering, there is liberation, and the Eightfold Path that leads to freedom and liberation. He saw into the dependent arising conditions and causes of suffering, the impermanent nature of things, and that there is no Atman, God or divine immutable essence, and the nature of the self is fundamentally empty and effervescent. Thus he invited his monks to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In the early sutras, taking refuge in the Buddha meant to take refuge in him personally, to trust the guru, to trust the awakened one who knows and can see clearly and guide his disciples. After the Buddha died, taking refuge in the Buddha shifted in meaning to taking refuge in the awakened heart-mind. That is one's essential nature, Buddha nature. So taking refuge in Buddha Dharma Sangha is also called the Triple Gem. And we chant this every day in session, intone this, in Pali, in the ancient language of the Buddha. Buddham saranam gacchami, Dhammam saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami. And it is this chant that is chanted in all Buddhist schools still today, 2,500 years. Yeah? This Pali chant is chanted in Pali. The same. It's probably the only chant that any of these Buddhist traditions have. So if we're not taking refuge in the historical Buddha, and we are taking refuge in the awakened heart-mind, then what is that? There are a number of cases in the Wu Man Kan that point to and embody the Buddha way. In case 33, a monk asks Great Master Matsu, "What is Buddha?" Matsu replies, "Not mind, not Buddha." And in case 30, a monk called Ta Mei asks Matsu, "What is Buddha?" Matsu said, "This very mind is Buddha." In case 21, a monk asks Yunmen, "What is Buddha?" Yunmen says, "Dried shit stick." Like the shit in the toilet, yeah? Eiken Roshi used to love saying that. I still remember today when I first heard that Taisho. It was in the convent of the Sacred Heart in Baradu in south of Sydney, which is a nun's, you know, monastery, Christian nun's monastery. And he would go, "Dried shit stick!" And these nuns would just quake and kind of like, "What the hell does that mean?" In case 18, a monk asked Tung Shan, "What is Buddha?" Tung Shan said, "3 pounds of flax." So the question is the same, yet all of these great sages' responses are different. And these are the teachers. Great Master Matsu is from the golden age of Tang Zen, which is about the 8th century. And so Matsu says, not mind, not Buddha. He is saying it is not your story mind, it's not your endless kind of thinking sequence of consciousness up to now. Matsu's not Buddha is also an invitation to wake up and realize and let go of your ideas and beliefs about what is enlightenment or what is Buddha. All of those thoughts are just more manifestation in the mind. Yada, yada, yada. That will not liberate you. Those thoughts, those ideas, those beliefs, no matter how wonderful they are, do not bring about liberation. Freeing oneself of those beliefs, recognizing those thoughts, letting them go, taking refuge in that vast oneness of not knowing, the emptiness of your own essential nature that has no name. Not Buddha, not mind. Right. You can then appreciate Matsu's further response to the monk's question, what is Buddha? This very mind is Buddha. This is a much deeper response in a way. Not so easy to see. This is not a contradiction either. It is recognizing the other side of the empty world, that we come forth just as we are. How could Buddha mind be anything other than ourselves, right here and now? Buddha is not some separate state of mind or something alien, exotic, or transcendental. It is the heart of this very humble, ordinary being, sitting down, wearing clothes. It is closer to you than your very breath. As Dogen stated, when one forgets the self, one is confirmed by the birdsong. The dried shit stick, 3 pounds of flax, a cup of tea, the sound of the bell, the nourishing food, the open paddock. Each thing fills us up and empties us out every moment of those limited ideas of self. Dear friend of mine, for 30 years, we practiced together. He was my student for about 10 years, Sexton Burke. We chant his name in these sutras. Great, great teacher. He died a couple of years ago. And just before he died, I would ring him up and say, Sexton, how's your practice going? And at that time, he could hardly walk, and he was just sitting in his armchair every day in his house looking out across the paddock. And so he was able to embrace that full catastrophe of life without clinging or without aversion, with great equanimity in that moment-to-moment experience. He was a very free soul, just sitting in his armchair looking out at the paddock. And he said, I am perfectly happy right now. Here. Each moment is so full and complete and overflowing. There is nothing else. Full and complete. My mind is at peace. This very mind is Buddha. Not mind, not Buddha. So he embodied that well. And right to his very last breath. It was a privilege to be with him. Taking refuge in the Dharma. Taking refuge in the Dharma is taking refuge in this wise and compassionate teachings of liberation. It's taking refuge in the whole body of knowledge that acts as a map of the territory of a spiritual life and guides and informs us how to practice And our practice also, what we do on the cushion, needs to tie into the teachings, and the teachings inform our practice. So there's this intimate relationship with the understanding and the knowledge base of the teachings that act as a guide. So having faith in the Dharma is having faith in noble silence, in the way of practice, sitting down on the ground, calming the restless mind, letting go into the moment, having faith in the great questions that move through the human heart, the formal questions that sincere men and women have struggled with and wrestled with down the generations. These questions that open the mind and heart, that liberate us. What is mu? Which Alan spoke so beautifully about yesterday. What is your original face? Who's hearing? To drop these questions into your practice. Yeah. They're powerful questions. The mind can ask the question, but the mind cannot answer those questions. Let the heart and the universe answer those questions. So I've encountered particularly painful and difficult circumstances in my life recently. My mother is ill. She had a mini stroke just before, the day before session started. So I'm on call in some ways, tuning in every day to what's happening at home and other personal crises in my life. But it's in those painful, difficult times that I've relied on the Dharma teachings and my practice, and they are a powerful resource. They offer solace and comfort and guidance and strength of heart and mind. And they are so uplifting in trying times. So my practice has been one of just holding that great spaciousness, a great container for the grief and loss and painful feelings that come through like waves and come and go. And it's I don't know how, honestly, people manage or survive in this life without the Dharma, without a practice. People really do fall apart. In the wrong way. Yeah. There's falling apart in the right way, and there's falling apart in the wrong way. Yeah. And so our Dharma and our practice at these times comes to the forefront. Yeah. For the most part, the majority of people are searching for some security or control and certainty of some kind in life, when we have very little control over our life events. The recognition that there is no ultimate security and certainty is indeed our first wake-up call as human beings. It's quite scary to recognize that. But it is an opportunity to mature and wake up to the bare impermanent reality of life as it is, this unstoppable river of life. It may not be the way we want things to turn out, or the way we dreamed of it, or what is actually right or fair sometimes. But it's our chance to realize that this mundane life is all there is. This very mind is Buddha, not mind, not Buddha. And then we can see with new eyes and wake up to that, from that ancient sleep of misconception and delusion. And it doesn't mean that it's easy. As we dig deeper, it becomes obvious that there is nothing that is stable or permanent in our experience, inside or outside. Nothing that is not touched by these forces of change. The truth that we face is that there is no ground to stand on at all. And when we see clearly, we see that groundlessness of our being. Our Dharma practice helps us to abide with that groundlessness without freaking out. We come up against that fear of groundlessness, and our practice carries us through that. It is the raft that carries us to that other shore. Pema Chodron said, "The next time there is no ground to stand upon, don't consider it an obstacle. Consider it as a remarkable stroke of luck." we have no ground to stand on, and at the same time, it could soften us and inspire us. So the Middle Way teachings invite us to find peace wherever we are, here and now. By neither grasping nor rejecting life, we can find wakefulness and freedom in the midst of our joys and sorrows, our pain and grief. So the Dharma invites us to sit in the middle of your life and realize you are an expression of this sacred mandala. You are the bright day and the soft rain and the dark night. That everywhere you look, there you are. You are the tree and the flower and the ocean. You are that constantly moving, shifting, changing moments and also groundless. Baseless. We are all part of this stream. This is your essential nature, manifesting moment by moment. And this sacred perception is profoundly healing. It heals that ancient wound of separation and alienation. We are part of this universe, seamlessly connected to it. And it's always been so. Realizing this is knowing your empty and full, boundless, overflowing nature. I remember years ago when I was having a very tough time in the Zen Center, and I was doing one of those 3 months training periods, retreats with Eiken Roshi. And it was kind of in a dark and difficult space quite at that time. And Roshi said, you know, it's only a quarter turn, Savanna, from where you are right now, from that suffering and that darkness, to I alone and sacred in the whole universe. And that gave me hope, you know. Only a quarter turn from where you are right now to I alone and sacred in the whole universe. And it is like a flick of the switch. It depends on your perception. The way you see life. Taking refuge in the Sangha. Originally, taking refuge in the Sangha was referred to taking refuge in the monastic community. But over the years, this term has been broadened and come to mean to take refuge in the practice community of like-minded companions along the path, along the way, not just in the monastic community. And at taking refuge in the Sangha here is also taking refuge in the great interconnected oneness of our own nature, the trees and the birds, the great fields and rice and each and everything that supports us and that we are connected to. Great Sangha of mountains and rivers that we have all around us. And recently, it's not only my practice that's helped me through, but an incredible sort of gratitude to dear friends that have been supportive in this time. And I wrote this piece just recently in terms of gratitude that I'd like to share with you. It was a question, what is carrying me right now? There are good days and terribly painful days, alternating between plunges into grief and loss, and days that are lighter in nature. There is an ocean of solemn clouds and an ocean of bright clouds. What is carrying me right now is my practice of opening into the broader sense of that interweaving of the nature of a lived, loved life. I am prepared to show up, meet, and be present to this. What carries me in this painful time is the compassion, good intentions, warmth, and kindness from dear friends, their care and connection, integrity, receptivity, the actual nature of the woven fabric of life with its many facets and faces. This is not a fairy tale. It's not always pretty. it's sometimes downright effing painful. Won't say that on tape.
Shit stick.
It's shit stick. Your man got it right. It does not exclude the fabric of suffering, the challenges, the broken trust, the grief and loss. Pain has been a somewhat unwelcome but curious portal which keeps expanding into the ocean of essential nature. This lived, loved life is simple and yet extraordinary in its unadornedness. This moment-to-moment unfolding carries me along. The materiality, body of breath, the caring and goodwill that others have for me, and I of them, the momentum of my own good-hearted nature. I let go into this lived, loved life and practice a receptivity, yielding into that. Yielding into all that lives me and you. When my mind is clear, I am carried by that ocean of fullness, the bird song, the water dragons diving into the pool, the bats feasting on the insects above the gums, the male voices downstairs, the bright sunny day, all held in this vastness and spaciousness that finds its home in this humble, trembling, vulnerable being. I sit with Yunmen's every day is a good day, no matter how it unfolds, and I try to embody this. Sometimes it sighs and sobs, sometimes not. This very mind is Buddha, not mind, not Buddha, co-arise. And I thank my dear friends for carrying me. Some of you are right here today. I'd like to also share this true story of a dear friend in terms of having faith in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. And it's the story of Achan Thanissanti, who is now a wonderful nun. And she was living in Dharamsala and wandering in the hills and forests in the slopes of the Himalayas behind Dharamsala. And this was before she was ordained, and she was engaged in intensive meditation practice in India while travelling around at that time. And so she went up behind the Dharamsala into the mountains and found a beautiful gully to practice. And so she sat down and she climbed down into this gully and she sat on this beautiful rock near a cave. Suddenly she heard a roar, a growl and a snort. Then before she could do anything, this great big black bear came out of the cave and attacked her. Achan Thanissanti, because she was not ordained at that time, but she exercised her faith by taking refuge in that moment. She took refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then she passed out. When she came to, and the bear had pushed her over, so she fell over, and when she came to, the bear was on top of her with her head in his mouth. So she looked up, and there was the bear. Rather scary, huh? So she was filled with utter and complete fear. The thought came to her that she was going to die. And in that moment, there was just total release. The body went quiet, the mind went quiet. There was clear discernment of body and mind, she said. A luminosity and a joy. She said the bear was pressing on her mind, on her head, and there was complete peace when she just took refuge. And at that moment, she said the sound of Om arose in her mind. I don't know why that sound was there, but it was there. And she turned her attention to the sound. And at that moment, the bear released its grip. She said that living through that experience with the bear was a direct result of her ability to be utterly present and utterly take faith and rest in the moment. That this life raft of mindfulness, being with whatever is in the moment and surrendering to that, we can have faith in and trust in that. And it will never let us down. And curious enough, after that experience, she went down to Dharamsala and went to the hospital, and there was a piece of the bear's tooth in her skull. And then she took robes. And still today, on her bald head, there is the scar marks from the bear. Close call. So taking refuge in her case literally saved her life. So many things come and go in our life. Jobs, roles come and go. Relationships come and go. Loved ones, friends die. But what is closer to you than your very breath, your true nature, is always with you. Right to the very last breath and beyond. So discover that which does not come and go. What is Buddha? Not mind, not Buddha. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha are not really separate. They are just facets of the same jewel. They are inherently wise. So taking refuge in your own original dwelling place. In this formless, timeless dimension that has no bounds, right here and now. And this vast, exquisite emptiness, which is pregnant with everything, each and overflowing each moment, the clouds, the songs, and the cries of the world, it is here, in this wisdom and this understanding, that you can find a true refuge, an unshakable peace.